I am back. Your boy is back. Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector. Oh my God, I'm out of breath. You know why? I'm back in the attic, baby. Two flights up from the kitchen where I get my big old cup of coffee. The show is called Philanthropy in Focus. The host is Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector. Guess what? It is 239 episodes. It is January 16th. 239 episodes of a show, a journey that I am on to continue to help nonprofit organizations and their leaders tell their story and amplify their message. And that's what I'm all about. And I always say, as the nonprofit sector connector, if it wasn't for the relationships I've built, the connections I have, the people that I know, some of these guests would never make it to the show because I wouldn't have had these introductions. And years ago, I was hanging out with my friend Heather Edwards, and Heather Edwards is the executive director of Allied Foundation. Millions, literally, folks, millions of diapers in the hands of families in need. You may or may not know, but diapers are not covered by food stamps and WIC and support and things like that. Also, feminine hygiene products are not covered by these, by those costs, or rather those that support. So it's organizations like Allied Foundation that is out there on the front lines, helping both with period poverty as well as programs for diapers. So it's funny because, you know, Heather Edwards and the team at Allied Foundation, it was Allied Physicians Group, what was happening, babies were coming in and seeing the physicians. And, you know, the docs were saying, like, why does this baby have a rash? Or why does that baby have a rash? And bottom line was the moms and dads were reusing soiled diapers. And, like, it was like, this is like, it's not to say it's an easy fix, but here's a challenge. Let's fix the problem. And that's how that organization. So what does that have to do with Hampton's Community Outreach? Well, it's funny you should ask, because my friend Marit Mullen is here from Hampton's Community Outreach. And what's good, we're going to talk in a second. But what's funny is I said to Heather, who are some of these organizations you do work with getting diapers out there? And because I can't help myself, and I'm maybe in some ways a little bit insatiable and a little bit wild, I was like, dude, what if I rented like a U-Haul and I drove out to Hop Hog where you're at and I filled up the U-Haul and drove it out to the Hamptons? And that, she said, I love you, Tommy D. You're a wild man. And I did that. And I remember, so Marit, good morning. We'll talk about that in a second, but good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you for having me on. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm so psyched to have you, man. This is fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that day that I did that, when I was telling Heather, I go rent the U-Haul. And then I remember I'm exit like 69 or 70 on the expressway. And I like pull over and I shot a video like on the shoulder. I was like, it's your boy, Tommy D. I'm out here. It was this time of year too. I remember being chilly because I was with Chuck, who very involved for a long time with your organization. Met him at his house. He had the trailer, and then we drove around like with his truck and his trailer. I think I followed him with the U-Haul van that I had, and we went to all these different pockets out east, and we're handing out diapers and wipes. I remember we went to a church and different things. And, you know, as we stand here in 2026, many, many challenges going on this planet, many, many challenges going on in this country right now. I just send love and compassion to everybody, man. I just think if we got to find more love for each other and hug each other and look out for each other, because there's a lot of stuff going on now. Yeah. I always wonder, like, is there more stuff going on, like, right now in the moment when we feel it? Or is it always like this, but it just feels like it right because you're living right now in the moment? I don't know the answer to that question, gang, but there's a lot going on. But I bring it up just to say that, you know, many of the communities that need these services are unfortunately under attack right now in a lot of ways. And it's a really challenging time in our history. And it's not a political show, gang. It's not about that. This is a show about humanity and love and compassion and helping each other. So Marit, through that lens of love and compassion and humanity, I want to really hear your story, because I make this kind of a joke, but I don't know how funny it is, but I feel like if people don't know Long Island and you talk about the Hamptons, they think it's the Hampty Hamps, man. It's just, you know, white parties Cosmopolitans and martinis and it's everybody's high rolling and Bugattis and stuff like that and yachts, and there's a lot more to the Hamptons, and that's why I want to ask you, and we talked about this, is why does this organization exist? What's your background? Why did you get, like, did you want to run a nonprofit? Was this a dream that did you always say, I want to lead a nonprofit one day? I want to hear your story. And then obviously you and I will get into the programs that the organization runs, how you're helping people. And as I always say, as we draw towards the close of the show, how can we help? What do you need? So how's that? First of all, what I need is I need one of those sweatshirts. I ran downstairs after you and I were talking in the little green room here to find my winter hat because Chuck gave me a winter hat. So I have a nice Hamptons Community Outreach beanie. And unfortunately, I didn't prepare. So when I went down to look for it now, I couldn't find it. But I
I'd
have
be
that.
happy to mail you, put a mail a shirt in the mail for you.
I got, you know what? I'm going to be out in Sag Harbor at, is it, am I going to Bay Street Theater? Yeah, I'm going to be at Bay Street. I'm going to be at Bay Street Theater with Tracy Mitchell with regards to the Long Island Imagine Awards, and I'm going to be out there. So I'm going to be out there on Tuesday. So I may have to figure out a way to get out and get some swag from you.
Absolutely.
All right,
I'd
we'll
love
talk
to
about
help
that.
you.
We'll talk about that offline, as they say. Tell me this story, man. Why does this organization exist? What did you find out? Tell me your background.
Sure. So, I moved out here back in 2015, and I, just like many other people, imagined the Hamptons to be what you described, right? Everyone is wealthy. It is a very wealthy place, but what I did not know, and what a lot of people don't know, is that in between the mansions are pockets of deeply impoverished people, people that don't have enough food to give their children. They have, their children that walk around with shoes that are too small. We hear from a lot of families, and we hear from school personnel who call us and say, "Hey, do you have a coat?" There's a boy or a girl, and there are many children who go to school without coats. So I was, I started finding out about all these different needs. So back in 2018, I had a couple of encounters with children. So I have two children. They are now 18 and 15. And back then, they would have play dates at our house with different kids. And sometimes I would ask the children questions such as, "Oh, summer is almost here. Are you excited about summer?" And they would say things like, "No, I hate summer because it's really boring. Because I just sit in the back of my dad's landscaping truck or my mom's car, waiting for her to be done cleaning houses or for my dad to be, done cutting grass or cleaning pools, things like that." And I was just shocked. So I also then started seeing children, I was volunteering a lot, and I went to a lot of different houses in the Hamptons, and I would see that there would be kids in the back of, these people's trucks. And I was just shocked to find out that in a place that's so wealthy, that there are children who are suffering so much. There was another kind of incident at my house. Something happened, maybe not an incident, that's not the right word, but something happened. It was really kind of propelled me. My daughter had a play date with a girl who is the daughter of an Ecuadorian immigrant single mom. And they were sitting at our dining table drawing, doing arts and crafts and painting. And my daughter got bored after a while and asked her friend, "Can we go do something else?" And the friend said, "No, I don't want to." And then they kept drawing. And then my daughter asked again. And this little girl said, "No, I don't want to. I don't want to stop doing arts and crafts because I don't have markers and paper at my house."
So this was an opportunity for her to do something she didn't have the access to. And again, we're talking about, this is Long Island. And look, I'm from Long Island. Oh, you're not originally from Long Island,
No,
right?
I'm from Sweden originally.
You're from Sweden. So, I always find it so interesting that you use that word pockets, and I think that's such an interesting word to use because I grew up middle class, depending on the year, maybe a little upper than a little lower. Both my parents always worked, and communities that are like ultra wealthy are literally right next to communities that have serious need. And I don't know if the whole country or the whole planet's like that. I just know Long Island is, where you can walk through. The one that always stood out for me was Garden City, where you walk through Garden City right into Hempstead, and you have, million-dollar homes, and then you have people with very, very high needs and lack of income and food insecurity and housing insecurity. And it's that awareness that made you very aware, that incident that you used, now we're using that word, incident, that event with the young girl. And what kind of fire, what kind of spark did that like build inside of you? What'd you do there? What happened?
So when I heard that, I was just shocked, and like I was just thinking, we're living in this place where, as you talked about, like they live in mansions, people live in $5 to $10 million mansions, and they have three cars, and some of them even have private planes. And here's this little girl whose mom, you have to choose between getting milk or getting drawing papers at Staples. And I was just so shocked. And so these children, talking to these children and hearing this little girl, they inspired me to start a summer camp. I decided that I have to start a summer camp so that these children that have nothing to do all summer have a place to go, have a chance to have a fun summer, and have a chance to create great memories. So I started fundraising for the camp, and this is winter. The event with the girl, that was winter, like February. That was in February, 2018. And then I had the idea then that winter, and then in the winter and spring, I started working on the idea, and I decided to go for it. And I started fundraising that spring 2018, and the camp opened its doors for the first time summer of 2018.
What did you know about nonprofit camp, any of this? Did you have any, I mean, you're, 'cause you're a licensed clinical social worker, you're a therapist. That's your background, right? Talk to us about that and how that informed this idea a little bit.
Yeah, so well, I told a friend, I was like, I'm starting a camp, and the camp is going to be for free for underserved children. And she's like, wait, what? Like, you're have never been a camp director. You're not an and it's actually an art camp. I didn't mention that, but it's an art camp. And I was inspired by this girl, because she wanted to do art. So I wanted to make art accessible. So it's an art camp, Hamptons Art Camp. And if anyone's interested in learning more, it's on our website, hamptonscommunityoutreach.org. You can click on the tab, what do we do? What we do, and then you can click on the camp to learn more. But my friend said, you've never been a camp director. You probably even haven't been a camp counselor. You're not an artist. You're not a teacher. Like, what are you doing? Right. And basically my idea was just to connect with everyone that knew exactly what needed to be done in order to run a camp. So I reached out to Miss Meg Mandel, who back then, she's now retired. She was a veteran art teacher from Sag Harbor Elementary School. And I asked her, do you think you can help me start a camp? Can you be an art teacher, and can you help me purchase, the supplies, and can you do the curriculum? And she said, sure, I would love to. So basically, by hiring and connecting with the right people, anyone can kind of do anything. You know what I mean?
Hold on a second. Hold
If
on a
I get
second. I think what my friend is talking about is networking, connecting, relationship building, and leveraging the smarts of other folks, right? Like somebody can have a vision. You had a vision and maybe you didn't know how to get it done, but you said, I definitely know people though, right? I can ask for favors. I can ask for support. I can tap into the people who know how to do this. Gang, you can do anything you want, man. Nobody does anything though in a silo. You could do it all when you work and collaborate with other organizations. I was just at, so I'm on the board of directors for several nonprofits here on Long Island, and I was at the Spirit of Huntington Arts Center yesterday, which is a community arts center, and at the old South Huntington Library. And we have a, it is an all abilities, full community arts center. However, we definitely have a focus for individuals with intellectual developmental disabilities, and specifically the Artworks program, which is when young people age out, they get to learn digital design work, website design. They redid our Vanguard Benefits, our company. They redid our website, our mission, our vision, our value. And I was checking out their podcast studio yesterday that they just built, which my family foundation, in memory of my cousin Linda, the Lindy Lou Foundation, supported some of the funds for the podcast studio. So the arts are so important, and we know that we lose a lot with the arts, with funding and things like that. But I'm just so jazzed. It's the wild thing about this is there's so many important organizations doing the work. Sometimes it's just not enough hours in the day. I was on the phone with Mercy Haven yesterday, and they have an event. They just did a documentary film, Mercy Haven in the mental health space, which, gang, I'm all about hashtag ending the stigma together. I see my therapist twice a week. I tell you that all the time. And why do I tell you that? Because it's okay to do that. It's okay to see our therapist. It's okay to realize we're all battling things. Everyone you meet, Tommy D, here he goes. Everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. Be kind always. Marit, we got to take a quick break. I'm going to share the website while we go to break. We'll come back. We'll talk about camp and how that camp rolled into what it is that all the different services. And when I first became aware of you all, it was a small organization. And I understand it still is a small organization, but dollar wise, I'm seeing some things, man. You're really, I mean, when I say small, I mean, 68 homes repaired, over $6 million raised, right? 400 families fed weekly, 550 children supported. So, as far as impact, not so small anymore, right?
Right. So last year we raised 3.5 million.
$3.5 million. So we're going to talk about all that today, because
Awesome.
what starts out as grassroots, gang, can certainly change by the power of the people. Never doubt that a small group of committed citizens can change the world, because in fact, it is the only thing that ever has. Margaret Mead, Tommy D, right back in the attic. See you soon.
Awesome.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Nonprofits need connections to move in good directions. So cut through all the static. Join Tommy in his attic.
That's right. And he really is in his attic today. Your boy is back in the attic. Things have changed. I'm on the road a lot. I'm in my office a lot. So I haven't been in the attic as much. And I will tell you this, gang, an attic is just a little like room on the top of your house. And when it's 27 degrees out, it's pretty cold in that room on the top of your house. So the space heater is keeping me a little toasty. But I have to get out of the attic soon, because it's a little chilly to be in an attic. Anyway, your boy's in the attic. Cut through the static every week on the show, helping nonprofits tell their story and amplify their message. Marit, let's get back after it. Let's go. I share the website. Gang, go to HamptonsCommunityOutreach.org, HamptonsCommunityOutreach.org to check it out. I really like the website, by the way. I love the colors. And I tell me about... You have the idea, you see that, and we kind of told people a little bit, which we'll tell them again, about the real large impact that this organization is making. But when I say small, I mean, it started out as a grassroots organization, right? I mean, do you even have other employees, or is everybody volunteers? What's that?
Yeah, no, right now we have four employees. Actually, I'm going to say three and a half. We have three full-time and half one person that's part-time.
I got it.
But to bring it back to the camp, and to what you just said, it's the truth. Like, if you have an idea and you just connect with the right people and you're willing to work hard, nothing is stopping you.
Yes. I love that. So camp, what year one to the summer of 18? Is that really what the first year?
Yeah.
So what was that? Let's reflect back on that, which some of my guests go, wow, that was cool. We got to reflect back. Well, let's think about that first year. You kind of don't know what you're doing, but you have the people behind you. You have Meg Mandel, you have people, right? Mm-hmm. How many campers, how many weeks, what did that look like?
Yeah. So it started off as, well, the first summer, we had plans for 4 weeks.
Okay.
And what the how we started off was like, I would put up stake signs around the Hamptons, you know, Hamptons Art Camp. And we got a couple of people signing up that way. And when I say signing up, that means that, you know, privileged, paying campers. So I would fundraise for the camp, but we also had some paying campers, and that helped us obviously pay for everything, because you got to pay for rent, you need insurance, you need supplies, you need staff and counselors. And so, you know, it's expensive. So we got some paying campers through word of mouth and these stake signs. I also started an Instagram account. And that first summer we had about 22 children. Mm-hmm. And the camp ran for 4 weeks. And after the 4 weeks was over, people would, or after, maybe after week three into the camp, there were some parents of saying, oh my God, my daughter or son really want to continue. So we actually found another space. We rented a church in Sag Harbor so that we could extend the camp. So that first summer, the camp ended up running for 6 weeks, and it's always been a 6 week camp ever since 2018.
That's awesome. So how many hours a day?
9 to 3.
That's a full day, man. That's really great.
Yeah. And sometimes there are people that struggle to pick up their kids at 3 o'clock, which we obviously understand. So we've also made arrangements, like we can pay a camp counselor to stay longer just to allow, you know, working parents.
So that's great, because you're solving so many problems. You're exposing these young people to the arts. You're giving them a great summer. And you're also relieving the stress for the parent who, like you said, it may be a laborer or maybe, own a small business, housekeeper, landscaping, et cetera. But now they know that their children are taken care of during the day. And, you know, having four children and dropping them off at school every morning is, that's my biggest challenge of my day. And I know that for sure. But there is a part of it that, like, you know, where that at least, you know, they're all set for 6 or 7 hours in the day. Right. Like, you know, and I say 6, 7 gang, 6, 7, but you know, 6 to 7 hours. I don't know if that's going to be timely when people listen to this 5 years from now, this episode, but six,
like, what is he talking about?
6, 7, but like, you know, for those, it reminds me of other organizations. I don't know if you've ever done any work with Blessings in a Backpack, or Blessings Across Long Island. Very, very important organization. They send children home with food for the weekend, because as you probably know, many children go home on the weekend. They get, you know, folks get meals at school, but then on the weekends they're not getting so sure where their meals are going to come from. So I think it's like, I'm laughing because I'm being told that 6, 7 is not even timely now. I guess 6, 7's over. But I think that, you know, it's organizations like that, that they send, these children home with food for the weekend because, you know, so it just goes back to what I was going to say, 9 to 3. So the moms and dads also aren't really worried that the kids are getting fed because they're going to be at that part of camp.
Yeah, we provide free lunch to underserved campers. So for paying campers, we charge. I mean, it's an option.
That's okay, though, because okay that if you can swing it, pay for your lunch. If you need the support, you get the support. That sounds something like, I don't know, man. That sounds like humanity and community merit. I don't understand. Why isn't that what we're trying to do everywhere? I'm going to get on my soapbox, so let's just focus on the story of HCO, because I get crazy sometimes, but the idea is I love what you're doing because you're supporting people who need the help and need the support. So 6 weeks, but then you realize that camp is not the only thing you need to do here.
Right.
What happened there? What was that next epiphany for you?
Yeah. So camp ran 2018 and 2019. And some of the parents of the underserved campers, when camp was over, you know, like end of August, we would hear from them. They reached out to me and they said, you know, my daughter needs a backpack, or my son needs new shoes, or he has grown out of all of his clothing. Can you help? And so we started supporting families after the camp was over. And some of them would ask for art supplies because they wanted to continue doing arts and crafts and, you know, drawing at home.
Yep.
And so shoes, backpacks, school supplies, clothing, all of that. Haircuts also I remember paying for. And so that was 2018 and 2019. And then COVID hit in February 2020. And that is the time, like February and March is really the time when we start getting really busy. I'm going to say I just because now it's a we. We're an organization. We have staff, right? But back
Then
then,
it wasn't. It was you.
it was a one-person show, really it was. And so I would start fundraising, heavy duty, like in the winter for the camp. And so February, March. And so
What did you need to fundraise at the time? Let me just understand that. Like at that time, again, you were not a fundraiser, right? That's not,
no, I was not.
you're not a member of the AFPLI or AFP, or you don't have a development background. But you figured out a way to tell a story, right? That was compelling. I want people to understand that too, because that is a skill set that you had to figure out and learn. So talk to us about that. What did fundraising feel like?
So winter 2020, the COVID hit, and like I said, that's a time when I started getting very busy fundraising. And I then could not reach out to the people that I had reached out to in 18 and 19, because remember, like everyone was so confused during this time, because like everyone was told to stay at home, right? And most of the kids were doing like virtual learning, and nobody had any idea what the world was going to look like in the summer of 2020. So people would say to me, like I would try to ask them for money for camp for the summer, and they would say, "Well, how do you know you're holding camp? How do you know camp is going to take place?" So
So they, so it'd be like, so you're asking me to fund something with so much uncertainty. Hey, I gotta ask you a question, just to take a quick pause on this. Does it ever happen to you and everybody else out there? Like, I know I lived through that. That is when this show started in the attic, and it's because I was in the attic. That's how come that this whole thing happened. But I know it happened. I lived through it. It feels like it was forever 100 years ago, but it also is like, I feel like it didn't end either. It's so weird. Like, 'cause again, it was supposed to be done by Easter. Remember
Yeah,
that? I was always that's always the joke I loved. I always loved that it was going to be, we're going to be done by Easter. But what about that, right?
So I couldn't really fundraise for the camp, right? Because
Right.
nobody knew what was going to happen. And so I reached out to different communities and asked them how I could help, because I wanted to fundraise. I wanted to do something, but I couldn't fundraise for the camp at that point. So I reached out to other people and I asked them, how can I help you right now? Because I can't fundraise for a camp. And everyone said the same thing. We need food.
Yeah.
So I started sort of a couple of different things. One of the things I started was I started asking for money, right? It was on Instagram. I know people that need to isolate. There are elders who are stuck in their homes and they can't get to grocery stores and they're not supposed to leave their house. Could you send me a donation so I can go and buy nutrition drinks and coffee and like whatever toilet paper, whatever they needed? So I started raising money that way. Like friends, I sent out an email to all of my friends and asking if they could send me $50 or $100. But I also did something else, and that is that I reached out to different restaurant owners because, as you know, everyone stayed at home and nobody was eating out. And so the restaurants was really struggling, and there were numerous restaurants that were very close to having to close their doors.
I know.
And both you and I know who works in these restaurant kitchens.
Yeah, same people.
It's a lot of time, it's undocumented people, it's migrant workers, it's the people that really struggle. So I did not want these restaurant workers to get fired during COVID
It's
because
only
I
going to double down the challenge, right? These people are having challenges making it work to begin with, and then you take away the, for certainly for the community that you're referring to, but also for the entrepreneurs, the restaurateurs, and back in that era, I had friends on the show. It was early episodes of the show where folks were doing restaurants were doing a lot in the first responder community, and they were bringing food to the nurses and the doctors and stuff like that. But just to hear you talk about, and we'll take a quick break to, and we'll come back and talk about this, but just to hear you say like you're raising this money and then you're going to go shopping. I mean, this was a point, Marit, just to refresh people's memories. I mean, this was a point where like we were leaving our our produce on the from Instacart that was delivered. We were leaving it on the porch for 3 days and then cleaning it off on the porch with a mask on and gloves on. I mean, we got to remember, like, so the fact that you went out and went shopping and then apparently you're going to tell me delivered food to people who are homebound and needed support at the time. And right now doesn't sound like, oh, that's not crazy. No, like we didn't. I mean, I would have, if somebody was delivering food, we would make sure we were inside the house. Remember that time, how, I don't want to say it was crazy for us, but it was just, we didn't know. You didn't want to be near another person, right?
That's right. Yeah.
It was such a wild time. So you just to put yourself in that position as somebody caring about others and raising that money and things like that. I want to take a quick break because when we come back, we'll go into that restaurant piece. Because what I really want to just point out though, if it wasn't for COVID, maybe Hampton's Community Outreach is a summer camp. A summer arts camp, and that's what the organization is.
But very possible,
right? But this evolution in need changed some directions. So let's talk about the restaurants and the support you did when we come back from a break. The show's Philanthropy and Focus. Marit Mullen is here from Hampton's Community Outreach, making big impact here on Long Island. Right back.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy and Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Nonprofits need connections to move in good directions. So cut through all the static. Join Tommy in his attic.
All right. Show me in the attic. Marit, I want to ask you this. You didn't need to do any of this. So I want to go backwards before we go forwards. I promise we're going to come back to this restaurant thing, but you did not need to do this. Plenty of people had become aware of similar needs and maybe didn't do something, or maybe people see similar needs. And I happen to be looking on the home repair piece on your website, everybody, hamptonscommunityoutreach.org. You didn't need to do this. What was it in your background, your upbringing, your youth, your family situation when you were younger? What was it that you said, I'm in a good position, I can be helpful, I'm going to do this? Why?
It's such an interesting question, because I meet people all the time that tell me things like, oh yeah, I saw this, you know, this homeless man at 7-Eleven, or I saw this or this, and you know, that's just so sad. Mm. And I have this thing in me that when I see something that's sad or I see someone suffering, like I have to do something about it, because otherwise it will just eat me. Yeah. You know, like I will go home and I will not stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
So personally, like for me, like my makeup, my emotional makeup is that I am a very empathic person. Like I have so much empathy, maybe sometimes even too much, right? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. I meet someone that's hurting and I just can't stop thinking about them for days, you know, and it's sometimes distracting, you know?
Yeah.
But I also feel angry. I feel angry that society, the state, the government, the world, neighbor, like I feel angry that not more is done to help struggling neighbors. And so I have to do something about it.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And in a lot of ways, I hear exactly what you are, because to my own detriment, sometimes I go above and beyond when I forget to take care of what Tommy D needs sometimes.
Right.
Yeah. It kills me. Like I always try when I see somebody broken down on the road, I always try to stop. And if I can't, because I'm like jamming, I got to get somewhere and I cannot stop. I'm like, right. Oh, man. But like I beat myself up that I didn't stop to try to help the person with the flat tire.
Yeah.
And it's because like I have a meeting I'm supposed to be at, or I have to a presentation I have to give. And I'm like, I'm torn. It's, It's, I think that's just that's, I believe, where we're supposed to be from a humanity perspective, is just supporting each other and helping. And, so the restaurant piece, let's go there, because it was like a double whammy, right? Where you have the restaurants are hurting, some of them are going to close down, and people who are just making ends meet or not making ends meet prior to the pandemic now could be out of work, and it's only going to get worse. So
Right.
yeah, and it wasn't even just people like in hospitality and restaurants. I mean, so many people who were never on a food line, who were never going to a pantry, were all of a sudden going to a pantry, right? So talk about, the restaurant piece, because that's, you really poured into that, it sounds like.
I found out what restaurants were really struggling and, close to having to close their doors. And again, like I said, having these restaurant workers being fired during COVID, it was just, I mean, tragedy. So I raised funds and then I took the funds to the struggling restaurants and purchased meals. And I took those meals and delivered them to struggling communities. So at the end of 2020, we had delivered 7,000 hot cooked meals and 20,000 pounds of fresh produce. So there is a produce company that's located at Mid Island who sent trucks out to the restaurants in the Hamptons, and we placed orders with them so we could get fresh produce, and that was delivered to families. And we also provided groceries to 250 families bi-monthly. And that was done with the funds that I raised in 2020.
How much did you raise in 2020?
$320,000.
Got it. So brand new organization, not brand new, but I mean brand new in this focus, right? A couple of
Right.
years in, right? 18 and 19, you have the camp, but new into this part of the venture, raising them some serious money there. 7,000 cooked meals, 20,000 pounds of produce. The produce piece, first of all, I love the double benefit, the win-win, or probably a triple win, really, with the restaurants piece, because you're supporting these restaurants, right? Their folks are now working where they might not have been working. But the produce piece really stands out for me too, because we talk a lot about certain areas where there's food deserts, and communities have, you drive through certain communities and you have a bunch of fast food restaurants, but there's not somewhere to get maybe fresh produce. And
Right.
that's a lot of 20,000 pounds of fresh produce. I mean, that's a game changer. And what now, how did you do that from a distribution perspective? Were you dealing with community-based organizations? Were you dealing with, I'm assuming there'd be like faith-based organizations that you would partner up with and stuff like that?
Well, I there were a lot of people in 2020 who wanted to help. Like, a
Yes, that's
lot of
true.
people weren't working and they had a lot of free time, or they started working from home instead of commuting, so they just had more times on their hands. So people started reaching out to me saying, I want to volunteer. So we relied on volunteers that would distribute it. And we also have a trailer, and we would fill it and we would drive to the different communities.
That's awesome.
So the different communities that benefited from us was like in every town, there are streets, there are neighborhoods where the marginalized, communities live, right? So we would drive to these streets and houses, apartment buildings, and there were some apartment buildings that, like you can see from the outside, they're falling apart, right? But then when you go in and people started trusting you and they open the door for you go in and you see there's actually like three families living in a two-bedroom apartment. And so then after, people started to trust us and we would come to their doors and we would knock on their door and leave the food outside. It was word of mouth. People started reaching out to us and saying, like, I'm a single mom. I just lost my job because of COVID. Could I also get food from you? So we structured a delivery system with the help of volunteers and we would go to their doors.
Wow. I mean, that's like, again, thinking that time in history, door-to-door service was like, it was a scary thing. I don't joke when I mean, I remember the Lysol wipes. You couldn't get enough Lysol wipes. And I
Right.
remember, I can sit, very clearly remember green apples that sat on my porch for 3 days before we would bring them in the house. I mean, like, just so the fact that you were putting yourself in, at the time, what we considered harm's way and danger of interacting with folks face to face, that's just not everybody was doing that at that time in history. And When did it sort of come into the fact where you realize some of these homes are in disrepair and that was like kind of a next thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we were out in different communities delivering these meals, or produce or groceries, we started meeting people, and I became known as kind of like someone that gets things done. Like, here is someone that's like, you know, in action, right? Yep. Trying to help people. So people saw that, and people would come up to me and ask me for things. And one of those things that people would ask for was help with home repair. Mm-hmm. And I was really, really shocked. I started meeting with families in their houses, and I just could never imagine that I would ever see something like that in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
I met with families that, you know, they raised their children in a house full of black toxic mold.
Yeah.
What do you do when you work paycheck to paycheck? And I mean, you struggle to, you can't even buy enough food. What do you do when you need to do a mold remediation for maybe $15,000? And then, as you know, when you do a mold remediation, you also then have to pay for a rebuild. So what do you do when you have nowhere to go and you have no funds?
No, and you know what it is too? This is just, gang, listen up for a second. This is the social determinants of health. What are we talking about, right? Certain communities, you know, you want to talk about poverty, lack of food and lack of housing, but you know, you talk about then people are in living environments where they end up getting sick, right? You talk about black mold. So, right now you're sick. Now you're in the healthcare system. What does that do? You know, yes, I professionally own an employee benefits agency. So we talk a lot about health insurance and healthcare and things like that. What are the, in fact, when I leave you now, I'm actually interviewing Nick Stefanisi, who's the CEO of Northwell Direct, which is their health insurance carrier. He's going to be meeting me in the studio this morning, and we're going to have an interview. And, you know, that piece on the social determinants of health, man, it's this is a whole thing, Merritt. Like, you know, so now you get in there, and what happens? You start to realize that there's this need here to tell people. And I was sharing the website, gang. When you go to the website, you hover over our work and then click on home repair. And the before and after, I mean, it's... You've done over 70 homes repaired.
Talk to me
more about that.
Yeah. So I started meeting with families, and I saw them raising their children, you know, in their houses that have black toxic mold. Their flooring was so worn down that it was down to the particle board. Oh, so the children would be told that they could not walk around without shoes because they would get splinters.
Yeah.
There were lots of families living without heating systems. And we heard, you know, the stories where they would say, well, our children have to sleep in their snowsuits.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, and broken doors and broken windows, people that tape up garbage bags to try to, you know, cover their broken windows. So I was just devastated. And I remember I came home, and I live in a safe, nice house. And I came home and I started crying.
It's horrible
that our neighbors just like a couple of miles down the road, they live like that, but we live like this. Like, this is not okay. It's like not okay. So I decided that we have to add on a home repair program ASAP to our nonprofit, because we are not allowing our neighbors to live like this.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll take a quick break. I mean, I know we spoke years ago, but we should be friends, man. We should hang out. I love everything you're about, man. I this is like, I'm getting very emotional because this is the stuff I say, like, this is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. This is not acceptable. And I don't even just mean on Long Island. This is unacceptable on this planet. There should be nobody. This is not a resource situation. This is a distribution situation, gang.
Correct.
Let me let you all in on something. So everybody ready? Come on, lean in. Guess what? There's plenty. There's an abundance. We don't do the right stuff and get it to the people who need it. We're doing the wrong behavior. This is the wrong behavior. This is not how this is supposed to work. And I'm getting angry, and I'm going to pause right now and take a commercial break because I'm pissed off for greatness, Merritt. This is not the way we're supposed to do this as a race of human beings.
No.
It's wrong.
No.
It's wrong.
That's right. Yeah.
It is wrong. We'll be right back. Philanthropy in Focus.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Nonprofits need connections to move in good directions. So cut through all the static. Join Tommy in his attic.
All right. Throw me in the attic. We focus our efforts on the South Fork of Long Island from the Hampton Bays to Montauk. And there's a quote right here on the website. Again, go to the website, hamptonscommunityoutreach.org. I can't believe what has happened. Because I wrote an email to your organization, my friend got the eye surgery he needed. You've changed his life. It's a miracle. Sharing her emotion, I said, Jackie, you are the miracle. It is because you cared about your friend that this miracle happened. All right, look, Merritt, here's my question, okay? You're not a construction company. You are not an eye surgeon. You are not dentists, right? You also are not an art teacher. We found out about that in the beginning of the show. So how do you leverage the community? Because I would maybe some of your volunteers are doing a construction, but are there contractors, construction companies that you deal with that maybe we should shout out? Or are there more people that you're looking to deal with? Or are there certain vendors you would like to deal with? I mean, I love the that piece about the 20,000 pounds of produce I'm going to go back to. Because not only did you support the community, but now you supported a company that might have been struggling during that time. Because, again, if their main clients are restaurants and the restaurants are struggling, then the distributor of the produce is struggling, et cetera, the ripple effect, right? So who do you commune with? Who do you connect with in the, because, you know, construction people, architects, electricians, talk to me about that stuff.
Yeah. So what we need is, well, we need a lot of things. Yeah. We need a lot of funds, right? Yeah. So that we can pay for everything. As it relates to construction, it's not that easy to get donated services because, as you know, like living on the east end of Long Island is very expensive and it's hard. Like, it's hard to get donated services. There is a construction company that's located in Sag Harbor, Forden and Company. And Alex Forden, who is the founder, he's really a rock star. What he does is that he reaches out, he builds a lot of, you know, big, very expensive houses, and he uses a lot of subcontractors. And so when we need help, like we are building a house, he will reach out to his contacts and he will ask them if they are willing to donate something. Like, could you donate the staircase, or can you donate the framing or the roof, right? Yep. And so I absolutely adore this so much, because I say all the time that we all have to do what we can. Yes. Like, you're not a millionaire, and like, you can't donate $5,000. Like, don't worry about it. Like, what can you donate? Could you help us with a delivery? Can you donate some time? There's a woman in East Hampton who does not have a lot of money, but she knits hats for the homeless people, right? Mm-hmm. So she knits hats, she gives this to us, and we pass them on to help people stay warm throughout the winter. So
Time, treasure, and talent. Some folks have plenty of treasure, and I believe they should donate some of it. Other folks have talent. This woman can't write you a big check, but she can make these hats. And you know what? You know what's nice on a cold day? A warm hat and some gloves. That's actually really nice.
Right.
You know?
And some people have skills.
Of course, talent, yeah.
Like, if you're an accountant, or, you know, you're good at administrative tasks, like, we need all the help that we can get. So
yeah.
I feel like it's my belief everyone can help in a way, even if you don't have funds.
I love that. Yeah. And shout out to Alex Forden. I don't know you, Alex, but shout out to what you're doing. Website fordenandco.com, fordenandco.com. Alex, whenever we connect, love to have you on an episode of Long Island Changemakers, because it sounds like you certainly are a Long Island Changemaker. So we'll get that going. So let's, how big can this get? I mean, you've raised now millions of dollars, and all that money goes right back to the communities that you're serving. And you're doing this with a 3.5 employee staff, and must be so many volunteers, right? That you tap into that community. how big from your assessment, let's just focus on the communities you're serving, meaning geographic areas. How big is the need? Like you say, we need more funds. Like, I mean, would you break it down to how many people need services, need support? Like what, when you think about it, you're a visionary. I see that, Merritt. I've seen it since we started this conversation, right? What's your big vision?
Yeah. So, my goal is to be able to help every single family that's on our home repair waiting list. Okay. So we have about 64 families on our waiting list, and it's organized in a Google spreadsheet, right? Yep. So it will say the family's name. We will have received information about their income so that we can verify that they're underserved or, you know, in need. And then it's, what do they need? So on that list of 64 families, some of them are in need of a new house. And, you know, they could be currently living in, like, you know, their parents or grandparents' moldy basement, yeah, and they don't have a way out because both parents are, you know, working minimum wage.
Right.
So they're in need of a new house. And then some of those people are in need of home repair. It's like our doors and windows are broken, our roof is caving in, our ceiling is collapsing. You know, can you help? So my goal is to raise enough money to take everyone off of that waiting list. And I'm not stopping doing this work until everyone is off that waiting list.
I mean, there must be a range, because if it's doors and windows, maybe that's $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, right? And then if it's a new home, you know, that's another thing. Or if it's mold remediation, it's something else.
Yeah.
So I have some connections for you. We're going to talk offline, but
amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think? Like, can you, in your mind, when you do a job, and again, I just already set out that there's a range, but what does it cost roughly for a project?
Yeah. So what I can tell you is that, we need about $4.5 million.
Okay. So, you know, that would get that, that would clean off that waiting list. $4.5 million.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm well aware that $4.5 million is a lot of money.
Sure.
But you and I also know that there are a lot of people in the Hamptons who could write a check for $1 million and they wouldn't even miss it.
Let's go there. How supportive is the community? I mean, you said you went to friends and family and connections and things like that. How supportive is the community, you know, of the people who really, of the haves, you know, out that way? Have you got a big lift from folks?
I would say yes. There are, we have many, multiple millionaires, many millionaires on our donor list. We have some people that donate 100,000, 50,000, 75,000, even 200,000, 250,000 even.
Sure.
So they're, you know, very wealthy people. I mean, they're very generous. You know, some, as you know, everyone is different, right? And there are very wealthy people who are not generous.
Sure.
But we happen to have, you know, some very generous, wealthy people.
I love that. And again, you know, the more these stories get out and the more people hear about the need. And I mean, you're very specific with that goal. And I love specificity. I never know how to say that word.
Yeah, sorry.
I always have trouble with it. And I worry about it so much as I'm about to say it, so it even gets worse in my head. But, yeah, you know, you're very specific. 64 families on the list, $4.5 million. That's a campaign right there, man. Like, that's you could put that, you know, on a flyer. That's a real thing. I want to talk. We'll talk offline. I have some ideas about that. But I want to shout out Satel Institute, where I operate as an executive liaison. Satel Institute is a fully funded nonprofit organization all about corporate social responsibility. And the members of Satel Institute make a multi-year, they're all for-profit leaders who make a multi-year giving commitment to a non-for-profit. And in doing so, they become a member of the Satel Institute. So in Philadelphia, there's 450 members of Satel Institute who are, I'll just use the title CEO just for a placeholder, but it's C-level executives at for-profits that get together. They mastermind. It's not a think tank. It's a think and do tank. Mm-hmm. And And it is not just about altruism. These folks are getting together because they're business professionals, but they don't necessarily know how to implement the work that needs to be done in community. They can fund these things. So it's fully, you and I will talk about it offline. I'll connect you with my colleague, Paul Howard. We're going to be doing some stuff on Long Island. But the bottom line is, because we're growing Sattell Institute here on Long Island, and the thing is that multi-year giving commitment. So it's a minimum of $25,000 per year over 4 years. And by doing that, that then opens up the opportunity for that for-profit company to become part of Sattell Institute. And then there's the conferences and masterminds and all this cool stuff. And the nonprofit partner becomes a member as well. We'll get into that.
We're talking about people doing what they can.
100%. That's all it is, man. I want to ask you real quick before we go, is there, aside from what we just talked about, is there anything specific coming up, something specific we should know about?
Yes. I would love to tell you about Love Fest. We have an annual fundraiser that's called the Love Fest. And this year it takes place on February 7th in Southampton, 5 to 7 p.m. At the place called 230 Elm. And I would love for, we want to fill the room with compassionate people. So I would love to have you help us spread the word.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You and I should do next week. We should do a quick video about it, just specific about that, about Love Fest. I'm all about love, man. That's it. Tommy D. You know, I when my hair is short like this, I say I'm like a short haired hippie. When it's when it's long, I'm just a regular one. And that is at 230 Elm Street. And I'll share that out. You get me some more information. But if you go to the website, the pink bar on the top of the website takes you right there to Love Fest. So I want to be there with you that Saturday afternoon. So we'll talk about that. I'm going to be in Sag Harbor, I said, on Tuesday afternoon. So you and I will text later on.
I owe you a shirt.
You owe me a shirt. You owe me. Yeah. Now you know, I love it. Listen, Marit, this has been so awesome. I appreciate you. We're going to do some stuff together in 26. And I know specifically what you're looking for, and specifics are what really are things that people remember. The show is Philanthropy in Focus. I am Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector. This has been another In Focus production. I'll see you. Next week's like episode 240, but who's counting? I'll see you guys next week. Make it a great day. Bye.
Tommy, thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.